Good morning. Atmospheric carbon dioxide levels have been rising steadily since the start of the Industrial Revolution. In acknowledgement of this fact, an increasing number of studies have been conducted on how various ecosystems are reacting to this change, and more importantly, on how they will continue to react as the levels rise steadily higher. Studies on numerous species of plants have found that in an elevated CO2 environment, photosynthesis and growth are stimulated. These would seem to be positive changes for future agriculture, but these plants are also tougher because of reduced water content, and they have less nitrogen for their increased carbon-based biomass. While studies on the direct effects of rising CO2 on plants are now fairly common, studies on the indirect effects on the herbivores in these systems have been slow to follow, although these studies are now increasing as well. The majority of these studies to date have been on Lepidopteran larvae in forest systems. These larvae eat more plant material, have longer larval durations, and have higher mortality due to their increased exposure to predators and parasitoids and decreased nutritional composition of their food. Helping to increase the amount of studies dedicated to atmospheric change was the development of FACE technology. Free air gas concentration enrichment systems are able to elevate atmospheric gases over a large area and are computer controlled so drift outside the target area is minimal. Soy FACE is a research site at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign, for the study of a common Midwestern agricultural ecosystem, that of soybeans. The United States currently grows 40% of the world's soybeans, currently an $18 billion industry, with Illinois the largest producer in the country. As you can imagine, there is a great deal of economic interest in how this particular crop will react to future atmospheric change. There is also a great deal of interest from an ecological point, since soybeans have a symbiotic relationship with nitrogen-fixing bacteria. The increased nitrogen available to these plants may help counter the decreased nutritional quality seen in other plants grown under elevated atmospheric conditions. There are four treatments at this site: elevated carbon dioxide, elevated ozone, a combination treatment of the two elevated gases, and a control ambient treatment. The chosen atmospheric gases have been elevated to levels that are estimated to be encountered roughly 50 years from now, although that has probably changed. While there are currently 40 investigators and their students conducting studies at the site, while some of them work in all the atmospheric treatments, the studies I'm going to talk about today with insects were mostly done in the elevated and ambient CO2 plots. Soy FACE is an open site, and insects readily colonize it each summer. While many insect species feed on soybeans grown under elevated levels of CO2, the studies I'm going to talk about concentrate on just three of them: the introduced Japanese beetle, the introduced soybean aphid, and the native painted lady butterfly. These three species represent three separate feeding guilds. Japanese beetles are leaf skeletonizers, soybean aphids are phloem feeders, and painted lady larvae are leaf chewers. Elevated carbon dioxide may affect each of these guilds differently. The initial question that we asked was, does elevated CO2 change insect preference for or performance on soybeans? We attempted to answer this question with a number of experiments, measuring insect gustatory and olfactory preference for soybeans grown under elevated levels of CO2, and measuring changes in longevity and fecundity of insects feeding on plants grown under elevated CO2. I'm going to start by talking about the experiments we did with Japanese beetles. Japanese beetles were first documented in the US in New Jersey in 1916, and they've been moving west steadily ever since. They were first documented in Illinois in 1994 and have since become established in that state. They are considered a pest species in all feeding life stages. The adults are leaf skeletonizers that can feed on more than 300 species of plants. You can see in this photo here typical skeletonization damage, with the adults feeding on the tissue in between the leaf veins. The larvae are more restricted in their diet, feeding only on the roots of turf grasses. Insect surveys and plant damage measurements done at the site originally found that herbivory was increased on plants growing under elevated CO2. This increased herbivory was correlated with the higher number of Japanese beetles found on these plants. Choice feeding trials were done to measure gustatory preference of Japanese beetles feeding on ambient and elevated levels of CO2, feeding on soybeans grown under ambient and elevated levels of CO2. And as you can see here, Japanese beetles prefer to feed on soybean foliage grown under elevated levels of CO2. Soybean foliage was examined for several different nutritive properties, And the main difference seen in soybean foliage grown under elevated levels of CO2 are increased leaf sugars, particularly glucose, fructose, and sucrose. This is the natural result of increased photosynthesis in these plants. Sugars, though, are a feeding stimulant for Japanese beetles, and increased amounts of them in foliage grown under elevated carbon dioxide could increase the amount of damage inflicted by these beetles. Y-tube choice studies were done to measure beetle olfactory preference for soybean foliage grown under elevated and ambient levels of CO2. In an ambient CO2 environment, beetles preferred damaged foliage over undamaged foliage. This was expected, as several previous studies done have shown that Japanese beetles prefer to orient towards volatiles released from damaged plants. In an elevated CO2 environment, though, Japanese beetles showed no preference for damaged foliage over undamaged foliage. This suggests that there is a change in the volatiles being released from soybeans grown under elevated CO2, either a change in volatile composition or in the amounts being released. The bottom graph here shows that beetles prefer damaged foliage grown under elevated levels of CO2 over damaged foliage grown under ambient levels of CO2. This clear preference for foliage grown under elevated levels of CO2 suggests that an increase in volatile production is most likely. This profile is from an undamaged soybean plant grown under elevated levels of CO2. The three labeled peaks here were significantly increased in plants grown under elevated levels of CO2, regardless of beetle damage. 2-3-hexanol are greenleaf volatiles. They are typically released from plants after wounding, either biotic or abiotic, and they are used as attractants by several different insect herbivores. 7-octanforol has a more fruity odor and may increase the volatile blend complexity. Japanese beetles actually prefer more complex volatile blends, as that indicates a later stage of feeding damage on plants. The increased amounts of volatiles being produced from soybeans grown under elevated levels of CO2, regardless of insect damage on those plants, may make these plants very attractive to Japanese beetles looking for food. While the results of the gustatory and olfactory preference tests helped explain the increased Japanese beetle populations on plants grown under elevated CO2, we were still interested in what the effects were on the performance of beetles feeding on these plants. Japanese beetle males and females fed a diet of soybean leaves grown under elevated levels of CO2 lived significantly longer than beetles fed a diet of control leaves. Japanese beetle females fed a diet of leaves grown under elevated CO2 laid twice as many eggs as females fed a diet of control leaves. This increase in egg production was correlated with the increased male longevity on these plants. Japanese beetle females lived longer than males, so as long as these males were alive and available to mate with, the females could continue to lay eggs. There are several different changes in plant defensive chemistry in soybeans grown under elevated levels of CO2 that may help explain the increased longevity in Japanese beetles. We measured the flavonoid content of foliage grown under elevated and ambient levels of CO2. Flavonoids are plant defense compounds that are inducted in response to plant stress, and they are also powerful antioxidants. Oxidative stress has been linked to aging, with the long-term buildup of damaged molecules in the organism leading to diminished function. Antioxidants counteract this damage by repairing damaged cells. An increase in antioxidant content in an organism's food supply could decrease the incidence of advanced aging and lead to increased longevity. We measured 4 flavonoids in our samples, the 2 isoflavonoids, genistein and daidzein, and the 2 flavanols, camphorol and quercetin. There were several significant changes in soybean foliage grown under elevated CO2 with flavonoid content, regardless of beetle damage again. As you can see, the flavanol glycosides were significantly increased in foliage grown under elevated CO2, while the isoflavonoid glycosides were significantly decreased in foliage grown under elevated CO2. Isoflavonoids are induced more often in response to biotic stress, so a decrease in them could lead to a decrease in dietary stress in the herbivores feeding on these plants. Flavanols, on the other hand, are increased more in response to abiotic stress, such as pollutants or UV light. The increased antioxidant capacity of soybean foliage grown under elevated CO2 could increase Japanese beetle longevity when feeding on these plants. Another potential contributor to increased insect longevity on soybeans grown under elevated CO2 is a change in plant digestibility. Soybeans produce protease inhibitors as one of their main defenses against insect herbivores. In particular, cysteine protease inhibitors are very effective against Coleopteran herbivores. such as Japanese beetles. Cysteine protease inhibitor enzyme activity was measured in foliage grown under elevated and ambient levels of CO2. And as you can see here, the levels of inhibitor activity was decreased in plants grown under elevated levels of CO2. Both the constitutive and the inducible inhibitors. Proteinase activity was also measured in the guts of Japanese beetles fed a diet of soybean foliage grown under ambient or elevated levels of CO2. And as you can see, proteinase activity was higher in the guts of Japanese beetles fed a diet of leaves grown under elevated CO2. The decreased inhibitor activity in the foliage of soybeans grown under elevated CO2 is allowing these beetles to gain more nitrogen from their food. These increased nutrients could contribute to increased egg production and to increased insect longevity. Gene transcription changes were also measured in elevated levels of CO2. You can see here the effects of beetle damage, growth in elevated CO2, and the combination of growth in elevated CO2 and beetle damage on transcript regulation in soybean foliage. As you can see, growth in elevated CO2 increased the number of transcripts regulated, either up or down, after beetle damage. Here you have the expression levels of lipoxygenase, alien oxide synthase, and alien oxide cyclase. The change here is in relation to the levels seen in undamaged foliage grown under ambient levels of CO2. Lipoxygenase, alien oxide synthase, and alien oxide cyclase are all components of the jasmonic acid pathway. Jasmonic acid is a hormone that is key to induction of herbivore defenses in soybean plants. As you can see here, growth under elevated CO2 dampens the induction after beetle damage. This dampened induction could be responsible for the decreased protease inhibitor activity seen in plants grown under elevated CO2. I'm going to switch gears now and talk about some of the experiments we've done with soybean aphids. A native of Asia, soybean aphids were first documented in the US in July of 2000, and they've since spread throughout the Midwest. They are one of the few soy herbivores that consistently causes a reduction in soybean yield. Aphids overwinter as eggs on buckthorn shrubs. In the spring, winged alates are produced that leave the shrubs in search of soybean fields. Once a suitable soybean plant is found, an alate produces a wingless individual that is able to reproduce clonally for multiple generations. Soybean aphids have fairly rapid life cycles. Nymphs are able to mature into adults in 5 to 7 days, and adults produce 3 to 5 nymphs per day. So depending on the atmospheric conditions, soybean aphid populations can double every 2 to 5 days. In central Illinois, soybean aphid populations peak around the end of July, beginning of August. We surveyed the numbers of soybean aphids at the Soyface site, and we found significantly higher numbers of aphids on plants grown under elevated CO2. We measured aphid population growth on plants grown under ambient and elevated levels of CO2 at the Soyface site, and as you can see here, aphid population growth was significantly increased on plants grown under elevated CO2. As I said earlier, the main nutritional changes seen in these plants are increased sugars and an increase in the carbon to nitrogen ratio. Soybeans are phloem feeders, which are already nitrogen limited, so it seems unlikely that these changes in plant carbohydrate content are leading to changes in aphid productivity. One of the changes in plants grown under elevated CO2 that is much more likely to affect aphid productivity is that of leaf temperature. Plants grown under elevated carbon dioxide conditions have reduced stomatal conductance, and they're warmer as a result. You can see in this photograph here, the soybeans growing inside the ring that are being fumigated with elevated levels of CO2 are 2 to 3 degrees warmer than plants growing outside the ring, which are growing under ambient levels of CO2. Aphids live in the boundary layer of leaves, so that temperature helps determine their growth rate and fecundity. We did a number of experiments in growth chambers in which we were able to reduce the leaf temperature seen in plants grown under elevated CO2 to the temperature seen under plants grown under ambient levels of CO2 by reducing the air temperature in the chambers with elevated CO2. This setup allowed us to neutralize the effect of elevated leaf temperature on aphid productivity and to test purely the effects of elevated CO2 on aphid productivity. And as you can see, aphid population growth on plants grown under elevated levels of CO2 was not significantly different from plants grown under ambient levels of CO2 when the leaf temperatures were controlled. This suggests that the increase in aphid population growth seen on plants grown under elevated levels of CO2 is the response to the elevated leaf temperature seen in these plants. Lastly, I'm going to talk about some of the experiments we've done with painted ladies. Painted ladies are a cyclical outbreak species seen in soybean fields in central Illinois. They're actually seen everywhere. I think they're found in pretty much every continent. The aphids never have population numbers that are high enough to cause economic damage in soybeans, but every other year they are consistently very visible in soybean fields, so we decided to do some experiments with them. Adults lay eggs singly on host plants for the larvae, such as thistles or soybean. Larvae hatch out in 5 to 7 days, and they go through 5 instars over the period of a month. Pupation lasts for about 2 weeks, and the adults will live for only about 2 weeks after that. The larvae tend to tie several leaves together with silk, as you can see in the bottom photograph there, and then they feed within that protective enclosure. We measured larval development duration and mortality on plants grown under elevated and ambient levels of CO2 to compare to larval lepidopteran studies done in other elevated CO2 systems. As you can see here, there is no significant difference in larval development or survival on plants grown under elevated or ambient levels of CO2. The nitrogen fixation seen in soybeans may be providing these larvae with enough protein to complete normal development, even though these plants are growing under elevated levels of CO2. To summarize our Japanese beetle results, Japanese beetles prefer damaged leaves grown under elevated CO2 over damaged leaves grown under ambient levels of CO2, which may be the result of higher amounts of sugar or increased complexity and volatile blend in leaves grown under elevated CO2. Male and female Japanese beetles fed on soybean leaves grown under elevated CO2 lived longer and laid more eggs. Increased amounts of flavanols and decreased amounts of isoflavonoids and protease inhibitors in leaves grown under elevated CO2 may contribute to increased Japanese beetle longevity and fecundity. To summarize our soybean aphid results, soybean aphid population growth is greater in soybeans grown under elevated levels of CO2, which may be the result of increased leaf temperature. And to summarize our painted lady results, painted lady larval duration and mortality are not changed when fed on soybean leaves grown under elevated levels of CO2, which may be the result of nitrogen fixation in soybeans. This talk today featured 3 insect herbivores that are commonly found in soybean fields in central Illinois. 2 of the 3 herbivores were greatly affected by soybeans grown under elevated levels of CO2. And even the 3rd, painted ladies, was affected by not decreasing as would be expected. All 3 of these species, though, are affected by different mechanisms. Insect-plant interactions are very complex, and if these studies are any indication, that complexity may increase under future atmospheric change in soybean agroecosystems. I would like to thank anyone who's ever been involved with the Soyface research site, and if you are interested in learning more about results done at the Soyface site, you should go tomorrow to Claire Castile's talk at 10:05 in room A6. Hi, Claire. Thank you all, and thank you for coming.
We have a couple of minutes for questions for Bridget, if anyone has any questions.
Yes.
We actually have not yet looked at the next trophic level of predators on these herbivores.
All right, thanks again, David.